Welcome to the 1-0 podcast, hosted by Joe Cook and Brad Kellner. 1-0 podcast, we're part of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast channel. Today, we will be talking some Texas hoops. We've got two wins and one loss to cover before previewing the end of the season, the regular season that is. And we'll talk about Chris Beard's first season in Austin, whether it is successful or not. Then we'll get into a baseball series discussion. Texas heads to Minute Maid Park as part of the Shriners call it. Shriners Hospital for Children College Classic.
There are
three great teams on the docket, Tennessee, LSU, and UCLA, to be a great test. Be sure to listen to our show and the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, and to also be able to give our sponsors some business too.
AV Consultations is our first sponsor. Give them a shout if you want to get the home TV setup of your dreams. We're in the month of March. I think you know what that means. Call them 512-255-8678 to get the TV setup you've always wanted in the comfort of your own home. And the 1-0 podcast, as Joe mentioned, is also brought to you by Altstadt Beer. It's the best beer that you can find all throughout the state of Texas. Whether you're in Central Texas, Houston, DFW, wherever you buy your beer, you can pick up six packs or tall boys of Altstadt Beer. It is the official beer of the 1-0 podcast. It should be the official beer of you as well. It's Altstadt Beer, no impurities, no regrets.
So whenever we last spoke, we were doing it day of that TCU game. And that was a game that for the Longhorns ended up being 75-66. And at a certain point, Texas was down 10 at home to TCU. And it did not look good. They weren't getting things going. And then the defense clamped down. And I forget what my key to the game was when we last recorded. I think it had to do with winning the rebounding battle. And I think they did just that. And of course, the defense going away in the second half. And that win, that's going to be interesting to see, because it all but looks certain that Texas is going to face TCU in the Big 12 tournament. But then they went to West Virginia. And Brad, I don't know about you, but I saw someone on Inside Texas post this, and I think it's a good way to view a team versus a game versus a technically last place team in the Big 12 who, while struggling this year, has good players and is often tough to beat at home. That was just to get out of there with a win, however you can game,
yeah.
Basically. Oh, yeah. And I think that's exactly what Texas was able to do. Of course, Timmy Allen had one of his best games as a Longhorn. But I think that my biggest takeaway from that game, and I've been beating this drum for a while, is that Chris Beard really knows how to manage end of game. He knows how to manage situations really well. And I was watching it with a few friends, getting ready for go to a wedding. And we were kind of talking over the TV, and we're all just kind of thinking, like, you have to miss the free throw here. You have to miss the free throw, because if you miss it, they call a timeout. Okay, it's 1 second left. They can't run the baseline. They have to heave, like all these different things.
Yeah.
I saw Fran Fraschilla at Big Monday and said, you know, we couldn't hear you that well, but were you thinking miss it? He goes, buddy, I've been there before. Of course I was saying to miss it. And then Chris Beard follows through. And you could tell it was an intentional miss because of how Timmy Allen's a pretty good free throw shooter, and he mm-hmm. went way back iron. And there's a lot of different things from that game to get into, including just some no-shows from a couple players. But Timmy Allen and being able to take over a game, and Chris Beard's acumen in late game and in situation in various situations, those were my two biggest takeaways from what was a, you know, that 13,470 at VU Coliseum. Not an easy place to play, and Texas still got out of there with the win.
26 points, 10 boards, 3 assists for Timmy Allen. He led the Longhorns in all three of those categories. And you're right, winning at the Coliseum is never easy. I don't care how bad West Virginia is, that's still a tough place to play, and Texas found a way to get it done. A win is a win is a win. They all count the same in the conference standings. So happy with that one. Not a great performance, right? Texas was down double digits in the second half of that game too. That wouldn't have been the greatest loss in the world for the Longhorns to take, but this group has been pretty resilient this year. And in both games last week, the TCU game and the West Virginia game, they found a way to battle back from some holes that they put themselves in. Obviously, you don't want to do that in every single game. You don't want to be playing from behind in the second half, especially not 10 points plus behind in the second half. But you know, the fact that Texas was able to come back and get a couple of wins despite being in those holes, pretty good. Good to see resiliency from this Longhorn bunch. So Yeah, not your normal West Virginia team. They're not going to make the tournament. You brought it up. They're last place in the league. But road wins in this conference, never easy. You know West Virginia fans hate Texas. Everybody hates Texas. But West Virginia fans really embrace the horns down culture. That's a big game for them. The fans were ready to go and amped up. The team was ready to go and amped up. You could tell. And the Longhorns found a way to get a dub. So a nice 2-0 week last week. You weren't playing the top three teams in the conference, but you were playing a couple of tough games, right? TCU. Hell, since that game against Texas, they've gone on to beat Texas Tech and Kansas in back-to-back games. So TCU is a lock for the tournament right now. They're playing some really good ball with Jamie Dixon. That was a quality win for Texas. And then to go on the road to Morgantown and get a dub. 2-0 weeks are always good, Joe. But those are two solid wins for this Longhorn bunch, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Locked up an over 500 record in the Big 12 during the first year for Chris Beard. Also, good bounce back from Marcus Carr after throwing up a goose egg or the 1 point he did versus Texas Tech. Goes 19 points against TCU and then, what was it, 15 points against West Virginia, second leading scorer. Good bounce back for him. Heck, I think he had a decent game against Baylor. He hit all the threes or two of the four threes, including one in basically crunch, the end of the game when it didn't really matter. Decent game against Baylor. He's bounced back pretty well since that no show against Texas Tech. And also Jace Febres has kind of come on of late. Like during the first, I think it was 10 games of conference play, something like that. You got nothing from him. Yeah. I mean, there's no other way to put it. You got nothing from Jace Febres. And now he's starting to find his shot a little bit. He's always given effort on the defensive end. He doesn't have the athleticism to really make a difference. He's got decent height, but he's always given good effort over there. And if he's going to get those minutes, that's what Texas needs. And especially if he's going to be able to start hitting shots the way he has, an experienced player, kind of on his last ride for college basketball and maybe stateside basketball in general, kind of, good to see him grow up in these past couple games and provide minutes that Texas has really needed.
No doubt. I had kind of closed the book on Jace Febres this season because he got off to such a bad start, both in the non-con and at the start of Big 12 play this year. I had kind of closed the book on him and figured, all right, the Longhorns aren't going to get a whole lot and Chris Beard's not going to be able to play him a whole lot. But you're right. As of late, Febres has come on. Shot making is his best attribute. Now, he struggled with that this year, and he's been way less consistent than we would have liked over the course of his entire Texas career, but he's been relatively hot as of late. And this is a team that doesn't have a lot of shot makers, especially a lot of good 3-point shooters. Like Jace Febres, when he's on, might be the best 3-point shooter on this team. It feels like it's either him or Andrew Jones. So, getting more from Jace Febres has been nice. You're right. He's a little bit limited athletically. He's an off guard, so he's not a great ball handler, not a great facilitator or anything like that. His role is to make shots. His role is to shoot and make threes. And when he's doing that, that adds an element to Texas that they haven't always had this season. So I hope that continues. I hope we see, just more shot making from Jace Febres because you need that. It's Captain Obvious stuff, but you need to make shots. And Texas, if you've watched this team play this year, they've struggled at that a lot this season, especially making threes. So, yeah, hopefully Febres can continue to improve and hopefully his role continues to increase as the calendar turns to March.
I know this was kind of a preseason discussion, but it wasn't always obvious how Febres was going to get his minutes. It was going to always come from shot making, like you'd mentioned, but this was it has kind of shortened up a little bit with the departures of Trey Mitchell and Jalen Tyson, it was always kind of curious, where is he going to get his minutes? And now he's starting to find those minutes as a result of that shot making. So pretty good for him. Anything else from West Virginia or TCU? TCU's had an interesting couple weeks. Texas is going to – I think it's pretty much locked in that Texas faces TCU in the Big 12 tournament up in Kansas City. They've had some good wins. They play tonight against Kansas in a COVID makeup game. Is this a 3-game week or a 4 games in 8 days week? Right before the Big 12 tournament. So a lot going on with TCU. They still seem like Texas seems like that's a good matchup for Texas. Like they can take advantage of that, but anything from these past couple games, especially against Kansas, that really worries you or other than the old beating a team 3 times in a year thing?
We talked about Jace Febres in a positive light, right? It feels like he's getting better as the season has gone on. A guy who's getting worse as the season has gone on is Courtney Ramey. Joe, you know the last time Courtney Ramey scored 10 points or more in a game?
Ooh, let me look at the schedule.
I got it in front of me.
Iowa State?
No, he got to go back further than that. He had 9 in that game against Iowa State. It's actually the Texas Tech beatdown in Lubbock, which he scored 12 points. And I think some of those were in garbage time after the game was already in hand. So I think Texas has played 8 or 9 games since then. Courtney Ramey has just disappeared. He was 2 for 10 against Baylor on Monday, 1 for 4 in that West Virginia game, 2 for 5 against TCU, 3 for 11 when Tech came to Austin. Where's he been? I know he's never been the most consistent player, but he's averaging 9 points per game this season, Joe. In the last two seasons, Courtney Ramey was upwards of 10 points per game. I think last year he was at like 12 points a game for Shaka Smart and company. This is a guy who's been at Texas for a number of years. This is a guy who you expect big things out of. And Chris Beard did a lot to keep Courtney Ramey here because Courtney Ramey had other options to go to the portal to try to maybe take his talents to the next level. And, man, I mean, he's not the most important player on this Texas team, but he feels like a pretty important player on this Texas team, and he has kind of disappeared lately. You know, he's a decent defender, one of Texas's better on-ball guard defenders, but it's not like he's elite at that. He's not a great facilitator. He turns the ball over more than I would like, and he just has not been good at all for Texas. So, hopefully Courtney Ramey can start to show up as one of the more experienced guys on this Texas team.
Yeah, this will kind of lead into a discussion about the Baylor game. There are no guys on this Texas team like Adam Flagler and James Akinjo. And there's probably nobody on this team like LJ Cryer either, even though Texas didn't have to face him. Like, those two guys controlled the game up and down the floor, on the defensive end, on the offensive end, Big 12, the basketball. And there's been a lot of discussion about Big 12 refs over on Inside Texas. That's not a thing in college basketball. That's just the style of play in the Big 12, and whatever ref flies in from anywhere, that's how they let it play because that's just what they know. But those guards, whether it be Ramey, Marcus Carr, they were bullied on both ends by James Akinjo and Adam Flagler. And both those guys had huge games in the first one in Waco. They followed it up both with 19 points. And I think both those guys were transfers as well. Flagler from, I think, Presbyterian, and Akinjo from Arizona, something like that. So those are two guys. And I think Akinjo said he didn't consider Texas. They had transferred a couple of years ago, I think. So it wasn't like this was an option for Beard. But those are just two guards that show, you know, how valuable that type of experience is, both on the offensive and defensive end. And Texas should have that. But it also shows how valued the athleticism is, and that's what Texas definitely does not have at this point.
Yeah, Flagler was on last year's Baylor team, but Akinjo is in his first year in Waco. He started at Georgetown, then went to Arizona, and now is at Baylor, so he's kind of been everywhere. But, yeah, look, you need good guard play in college basketball to win. And Baylor's guards outplay Texas's guards in both games against the Bears this year. And you're right, none of Texas's guards are as good. Like, that's not – a super shocking thing that none of Texas's guards are as good as Akinjo and Flagler. But as that game progressed, I mean, this was 54-54 with like 5 minutes to go, Joe. And then Baylor's guards took over and Texas's guards were kind of non-existent down the stretch. Athleticism and size issues for Texas. I know we're talking about guard play, so I'll start with the athleticism. Texas's guards just don't have the foot speed. They don't have the lateral quickness to keep fast athletic guards in front of them. And you saw that Akinjo and Flagler were able to kind of get wherever they wanted to get on the floor, especially late in that game. That's an issue. And then size, like even without Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua, Baylor's got more size than Texas does. They out-rebounded the Longhorns. They had a number of offensive rebounds that created second chance opportunities for them. Baylor's a bad matchup. Like, I'll go ahead and admit this. People might not like this because I'm a Texas grad and a Texas fan, and this is a Texas podcast. I put a pretty hefty wager on Baylor money line on Monday, and I put a pretty hefty wager on Baylor covering the spread when these two teams met in Waco. I just don't like this matchup. Like, Baylor's a better team than Texas. I think that's obvious. Baylor's going to be a 1 seed more than likely. At lowest, they'll be a 2, and Texas right now is probably a 5 seed. So I don't think I'm breaking any news here by saying Baylor's a better team, but they're a bad matchup. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast. Texas Tech, size and athleticism, teams like that possess bad matchups for Texas. So, it obviously hurts to lose. The last game at the Frank Irwin Center, you were tied up. That would have been a massive win for this team. But that's a team that Texas does not match up well against. And what really sucks from that game, Joe, besides all of it, the guys who have been here, like a lot of Texas is transfers, right? There are a lot of first-year players on this Longhorn team. That's no surprise. We know that. But the guys who have been here, the guys who have moments and memories inside that building, none of them showed up on Monday. And credit Baylor. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country. They're one of the best teams in the country. But Andrew Jones was 0-for-7 from three. We talked about Courtney Ramey. He was 2-of-10 from the floor. Jace Febres, who had been playing well, 1-of-6 from downtown. Those three guys, like the three holdovers from Shaka Smart, the three guys who have played dozens and dozens of games at the Drum, just no-showed. And that sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it sucks for them. Like, that's their final memory, unfortunately, in that building. So, like, those guys are all guards. They kind of struggled, and Baylor's guards really took over down the stretch. So, look, not a horrible loss. Baylor's an awesome team, but obviously you would have liked to have had that last game at the Irwin Center.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the shooting because it was atrocious. It was terrible. And this is a team with the way Texas plays. I looked this up today because I'm going to put this kind of a keys of the game thing. When you look at KenPom, they're number 340 in adjusted tempo, and they're only 358. So I looked up all the other power conference teams kind of below Texas. And Texas shoots, let me find it, they're at 32% from three. Behind them is Butler in tempo, 31% shooting from three, but they're 13-17. Yeah. Virginia Tech shoots 39% from three, and they're 19-11. You got Villanova, who's 36% from three, and they're 22-7, one of the best teams in the country. Penn State, 35% from three, but 12-14. And then second to last, I bet you know who this is if it's a power conference team. It's not UCLA, so that should really limit who your options are.
What's the category? They play slow and they don't shoot
well. Lowest in adjusted tempo, second to last in KenPom.
This is a good team?
I mean, Virginia.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they're shooting 32% from three. And so all the that's kind of the to say, unless you're Nova, who's got some transcendent talent, you have to shoot well from three if you're going to play that slow. And the games that Texas wins, for the most part, they shoot pretty well from three. But here's the thing. They've shot 30% from three in conference, and that just isn't going to get it done. Against the top four teams in the Big 12, so Tech, Baylor, and Kansas – they're shooting 25% from three. And so, yeah, of course, you're facing tougher competition. They're going to make those shots more difficult. But Texas just isn't shooting well against the toughest teams. And when you're playing as slow as they do, and I know why, because that's Chris Beard's strategy, especially with the somewhat limited offensive capability they have. They have to shoot well, and they just have not been doing it against those teams. That's why they're 1-5, 1-4 against those teams with one more on Saturday.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's well said. And this team's lack of shooting has put them in terrible jams a lot throughout the course of this season. And how many times have we seen Texas go through 4, 5, 6 minute droughts without a field goal, Joe?
A lot.
Once again, we saw that on Monday against Baylor. You're right there against the top three team in the country. You're tied up on your home floor with less than 5 minutes to go, and then your offense just falls apart. Baylor goes on a 9-0 run, ball game over. And, God, I remember a huge swing in this game, Joe. It was a two-point game. Baylor was up 56-54, so right after the game was tied. Courtney Ramey makes an unbelievable move to get his defender in the air. Ramey's like 2 feet away from the basket. He's got a bunny, and he misses it short. He damn near airballs it, and then Baylor gets it. They get out in transition. Flagler hits a three. 5-point game. I don't want to sit here and say like it was over right then and there, but a big 5-point swing in a low scoring game like that in the final minutes, that's heavy. That's heavy. So just for Texas, like that was a good look. And there were times in that Baylor game, there were times in the Texas Tech game in Austin where I thought Texas executed very well offensively. They're never going to be, you know, Nate Oates, Alabama, or Eric Musselman, Arkansas, where they're playing games in the 80s, 90s. Like they just don't play that way. And their offense isn't as aesthetically pleasing. That's a staple of Chris Beard, like you talked about. But, man, even when they do execute well, they just don't make shots. So,
yeah,
it's Captain Obvious stuff, but that's going to cause this team's demise in March. They're going to have one of those 4-for-20 three-point shooting days, and they're going to lose like a 58-55 type of game. And it's going to be frustrating as hell that that happens. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%. Like, I want them, we've talked about it a lot. I want them to get out and run more, especially considering how many turnovers they force. It'd be great for them to get easier buckets in transition before opposing defenses can set up. But I guess at this point, it's probably unrealistic for that to change. And it's probably unrealistic for the shooting to get a whole hell of a lot better because we're already into March and this thing just is what it is.
Real quick, do you know who is last in KenPom adjusted tempo? Dead last.
It's not Virginia?
It's not Virginia. They're second to last.
Oh, man. Are they power five?
They're not, but they're pretty good this year.
No, give it to me.
North Texas.
Oh, wow.
McCaslin. Who is 22-4. Yeah,
dude, they've won like 18, 19 games in a row. They're playing well. They're going to be they might be an at-large tournament team. Yeah. They might not need to win the CUSA to get in. Wow. How about that? Okay.
Imagine you talk about 58-57 game. How about a 48-47 game if Texas gets matched up with them?
Well, we damn near saw that in the first round
last year.
Yeah.
So we pretty much did.
Yeah, man. So I don't care if it's played that low scoring as long as Texas wins, but shoot, it'd be nice to not have to deal with 40s and low 50s again this year.
So before we talk about Perry Ellis's senior day and this last one with Kansas, real quick, who's your player of the year? Is it was it Jabari Smith or is it the guy from Wisconsin?
Oh, national player of the year.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm kind of partial to Jabari Smith.
Man, Jabari Smith's been awesome. Auburn's been better than Wisconsin. Wisconsin did just win the Big Ten regular season title though, so that helps Johnny Davis's case. Wow, that's a good one. You're going with Jabari Smith?
I think so.
I'll go with Johnny Davis. Jabari Smith's awesome. There's a good chance he's the number one pick in the draft with reason. I mean, I think that guy's going to be a stud at the next level. He looks like an NBA player. He's got the body. He's got the game. Fun to watch. Well, Wisconsin just did not have expectations at all this year. And the fact that they won a very good Big Ten conference with a lot of title contenders in it. And Johnny Davis has been their leader every step of the way. And that guy was like nothing last year. Like his, I know it's not like a most improved award, but like his emergence has been so key for them. I'll go with Johnny Davis, but man, you got a few other candidates. Those are probably the top two. You know, Jaden Ivey at Purdue, I think deserves to be in that conversation as well. He's been pretty spectacular this season. Trying to think who else would maybe enter.
But Bachero, he's been okay. He's still great, but he's kind of tailed off some, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Gillespie, maybe. Is he playing well enough? Gillespie's played well.
Like, Shibway's been awesome for Kentucky. Yeah, he might get
I forgot about him.
Yeah. So he's been
great.
You don't have like a runaway candidate this year like you sometimes have in this sport. A lot of worthy guys, but you might be right with your top two. That might be who it comes down to when it's all said and done.
So what about Kansas? And I'm kind of glad you brought up Courtney Ramey. And yes, he's not done it on the offensive end, but remember he locked down Ochai Agbaji.
He did.
And other Jayhawks picked up the pace for him. Christian Brown, David McCormick, they were able to play well. And I'm about to go to a Chris Beard press conference right after this. So I'm real curious to hear what he says, but do you think that type of defense is replicable, especially in Allen Fieldhouse, especially at this point in the year? It may be the route, considering Kansas plays tonight and they're playing, you know, three games in 6 days or something like that.
Yeah.
Especially to limit him. But do you think they can do that again? Because they kind of – I don't want to say they got lucky, but with the fact that they shot as poorly as they did from three and still were able to win that game, I don't know how sustainable a lot of different things about that first matchup are, especially Courtney Ramey's defense.
Yeah, look, I'm glad you brought up the scheduling, right? I mean, Texas last played on Monday. Kansas is going to play two games in between Monday and Saturday, right? They play TCU on Tuesday. They play TCU tonight. We're recording this on Thursday. So Texas should have the fresher legs in this game. And I've said this before, this is not hindsight because Texas beat Kansas and they're 0-4 against Tech and Baylor, but I think Texas matches up better with Kansas than they do with Baylor and Texas Tech. To answer your question, though, I don't know. Like, I don't think Texas is going to get to 79 at Allen Fieldhouse. It's amazing they got to 79 shooting 3 of 20 from 3, like you said. But yeah, I don't know. I think Agbaji's going to go for more than, I think 11 is what he ended up with. And he didn't get into double digits until the final minute of that game. I remember Trey Mitchell had that crazy ass banked three after starting like 0 for 5 from beyond the arc. Trey Mitchell's obviously not with the team anymore. So it's a winnable game for Texas, but man, senior night, Allen Fieldhouse, you know, revenge is going to be on their mind. If they take care of business tonight against TCU, that'll be for the Big 12 title. So it's a tall task for Texas to go up there and win. Ramey defended Agbaji better than just about anybody in this conference. So hopefully that could translate up there. But tall task for the Longhorns to sweep Kansas. They did it last year. I guess that's the confident thing. Obviously, a lot of new faces on both sides. But, I don't feel great about Texas's chances to go into the fog and leave with a W.
Yeah, Chris, I think you hope Courtney Ramey can do something like that. But we'll find out if that defense is replicable. The other thing is Trey Mitchell played 23 minutes in that first matchup. Yeah. And he's not there. And Dylan Dessou played 6. And he played 2, I think, on Monday. And he's been, you know, very, very hit or miss, a lot more miss than hit. But they're going to need him, especially against David McCormick in this upcoming matchup. And they're going to need him to get the boards because Christian Bishop can't do it all by himself. I'm sure he thinks he can and wants to. But, you know, the mind is willing, but the body's weak at this point in the season. And that's especially with the way Christian Bishop plays, it's going to be tough. So, that's going to be a really tough matchup. Imagine playing in the environment in Allen Fieldhouse on senior day. We know the type of influence that may have on some neutral parties there to observe the game, as it always seems to happen in Allen Fieldhouse. But yeah, that's a tough matchup for Texas. So let's for the sake of argument, let's go ahead and chalk that up as, I'll say that's an L.
Yeah,
so
I'm looking at Ken Pom right now, and they've got it as a 6-point loss. 74-68 is what they have for Saturday right now.
So let's assume 21-10, 10-8 in the Big 12 entering the conference tournament. Talking about, you know, just this overall first year with Chris Beard. I think he's done so much good for the program on and off the floor.
Yeah.
In that, you know, he tried to make the Irwin Center as good an environment as he could. He built up a lot of excitement, both I think within the school and Austin community for this season, and is going to carry that over to the Moody Center, which opens with Gonzaga next year, who's always going to be a really good team. But how would you grade this season overall for Chris, this regular season overall for Chris Beard, knowing the expectations he laid out himself? Knowing the home record, great home record, 16-3, knowing the schedule, and just kind of knowing everything we know about the Big 12, how do you think this season kind of fares as far as year one of Chris Beard?
If I'm giving a grade, the correct answer is incomplete, right? Like what happens in March is what is going to determine how successful year one was for Chris Beard. That's a cop-out answer. I'll give you a real answer. But look, ultimately, if Texas loses in the first round to a 12 seed or an 11 seed, this year is going to feel like an F. If Texas, even if they are a 6 seed, right? Even if they lose to KU and lose to TCU in the first round of the conference tournament, if they go to the Sweet 16, if they go to the Elite 8, it's going to feel like closer to an A. So that's really what matters. That's why Chris Beard was brought in, right? Shaka could not win in March, except for the NIT. Chris Beard has a track record of winning in March. But to not cop out, to answer your question, I'll give it a B minus. That might be lower than you thought I would give because I'm a huge Chris Beard fan, and I think he's done a lot of good things this year. But with the expectations for this team, I mean, this was a preseason top 5 team. And you could say that was a little ridiculous. You could say the national media overblew this thing a little bit. But you combine that with the fact that Chris Beard said the things that he said at his introductory press conference, talking about not putting an asterisk by year one, saying, oh, don't say these are Shaka's players. Like, these guys are all my guys, and all the work that he did in the transfer portal. Like, I didn't think this was going to be a top 5 team. I don't think this was going to be a Final Four team. But to go 10-8 in conference play, if that's what it ends up being, then that feels B minus to me. If they sweep Kansas, if they win at Allen Fieldhouse, go 11-7 in the league, then I'll go up to a B, maybe B plus for this season. But if they lose, it's B minus to B for me. A lot of good things. You talked about the excitement, the unite the family bit. I love the crowds. I love And I know Texas basketball is in really good hands. Like, I think this thing is only going to go up from here. And I think it's been a pretty decent first year for Beard. But I'll go B minus to B range, assuming they lose to KU this weekend.
I'm glad you brought up the expectations he set and also claiming the players. I kind of was contentious on Inside Texas a little bit this past week, talking about how, look, when you publicly claim all these players over and over, say what you'd said about them. Like, I would have recruited these guys anywhere in the country. Like, of course, I know that you can't be like, well, we got what we're left with. You can't say that. But when you not only claim it then, but over and over and over and over and over, you repeat it over and over that these are your guys. The just wait till he gets his guys argument doesn't register with me when he chose basically this whole roster. And that's not to say that he's done a bad job. It's he's done a great job basically putting a team together from scratch. But the thing is, he's going to be putting a team together from scratch pretty often in this era of the transfer portal, looking at all the seniors available on or seniors, even with eligibility on this roster. Like, these are his guys. Like, this is going to be how he builds rosters with some sprinkling of high school going forward. So I think you can kind of, I think it's fair to judge his roster building ability kind of on this year, not fully, of course, but on this year. The other thing is, you know, a lot of different outlets had preseason, like you mentioned, preseason top five. And that doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, yeah, I know, like, what, you know, if a guy from the Charleston, South Carolina newspaper has an AP vote this year and he put Texas at number four, it's not because he called Chris Beard. But there are the Goodmans of the world, the Borzellos of the world, the Rothsteins of the world that had Texas in the, you know, top five, top 10. That doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, those guys know. So, you know, that happens when Chris Beard's thinking and probably talking to those guys, or somebody at Texas is probably talking to those guys saying, hey, we think we can go a long way this year. Pair that with not only saying Monday night program going forward, but over and over and over and over talking about Monday night program this year. I think grading the season in a vacuum grading the season without that in mind, B range for sure. Okay. But when you set that expectation and you're 21-9 and fourth in conference, like, you know, I'm going to hold you to that expectation. I'm especially when, you know, now that's to say, and I also agree with you that, you know, I don't discount the regular season, you know, as and I understand why, you know, Texas basketball fans may, I don't want to say discount, but may look only towards March. But that has to do a lot with just being hungry for a win in March, I'm sure. But he's done a really good job during this regular season. Now, he's had some face falling, like that Seton Hall game. That was a tough loss, just because I feel like there's, you know, I didn't expect much out of Gonzaga. The Seton Hall game, the Kansas State game at home, the Oklahoma State game there. Like, there have been some, like, losses this year. But overall, like, he's done a really good job and has set this program up for a good amount of success. But I still feel like you have to view all that in light with his own words of being a Monday night program. And this is the month where he's going to have to prove it the most. So this regular season, kind of in a vacuum, I'm with you on the B range, okay. Especially if they win like one or two games in the Big 12 tournament. Yeah. That may bump them up to a four seed, but like, in it's been an overall really good year, especially as first years go. But you got to keep what he said in mind and never back away from in mind.
You set me up, Joe. I thought with the way you laid that out there, you were about to go D plus or C minus for Chris Beard for this regular season, because there are some people. I follow a lot of Kansas people on Twitter, obviously, because I'm a KU fan. And some of the Kansas accounts, who look, they hate Texas. There's some anti-Texas and probably some anti-Chris Beard bias there, too, because of Beard's time in Lubbock. But they're like, man, if Texas loses to KU on Saturday, Chris Beard took a preseason top five team to a 10-8 finish in the conference this year. Like, that's pathetic. So I thought you were going to be, like, a little bit lower on your grade for Chris Beard, just the way you set it up.
Yeah, I mean, I know it. There's certain aspects about that are talking about out of both sides of my mouth, and I guess I can understand that. But I can admit that this was a really good regular season, but also understand that when you hold yourself to a Monday night standard, that I kind of am going to take the liberty to do that as well.
Yeah. Look, a lot of the stuff he said at his UT introductory press conference was similar to what he said at Tech at UNLV when he gave that press conference and was there for two weeks.
That lasted 10 days. Yeah.
And Arkansas Little Rock, like he talked about wanting to win championships and wanting to win, you know, early, right? Little Rock, it was more conference championships and talking about like winning games in the tournament, which is what he did, right? Won the conference title and won a tournament game in his only year at Little Rock. And then Tech, you know, he talked about wanting to ultimately win championships like conference and national. So he said a lot of the similar things. He said the Monday night program stuff when he took the job in Lubbock, but he was way more adamant about doing that right away here. Like his other jobs, it was more like, oh, we're going to build this thing to that. But here it was like, now we want to do that this year. So he let him hang at the press conference. I loved it. I'm not going to change my mind about what I said back then. I thought it was awesome. And I still love Chris Beard. And I'm very confident that he's going to be the guy long-term, and Texas is going to only go up from here as a program. But I understand. Like, I don't think it's unfair by you to be like, okay, this was a top five team to start the season, and they're going to finish two games over 500 in conference play. It'll be like a five or a six seed in the NCAA tournament. When you start preseason top five, you want to be a one or a two seed, and you didn't quite get there. So, like, I understand. I don't think you're alone with the underachieving thing. You know, I will say this, and I don't know if I need to say this. Like Chris Beard's first year in Lubbock, they were 18-14 and missed the tournament. Now, there was no crazy transfer portal then, so it's different. But year two, Tech went to the Elite Eight. Year three, they were playing for a national championship. So my hope is, you know, like Beard will get more transfer portal players in. He'll see what he needs to do. He see what he needs to build around. He'll get three freshmen in at least. And this team, once again, can get better next season. And we can feel like, all right, this is actually a top five or top 10 team at the end of the season, versus like if Texas loses on Saturday, they're going to be unranked going into the conference tournament. Does that matter? No, the AP poll loses all relevance once the seeds start to come out, and conference tournament and obviously an NCAA tournament play. But yeah, hopefully next year the results in the regular season can live up to some of the expectations that were set.
Yeah, I'm excited for Arterio Morris and Dylan Mitchell, and even in the limited I've seen of Rowan Brumball, like that's a guy who you keep around for a few years and gets better as he goes along. So you know, he's got some great passing ability. So, and our Morris and Mitchell may be two of the more special players in this class. So yeah, should be a lot of fun going forward. And then we'll see who returns and who they find in the portal, because they're going to be trying to find a lot of different guys in the portal over and over again. Anything else, or want to get a quick baseball discussion in?
Let's do it. Let's talk about this top-ranked Texas baseball team that to this point has lived up to preseason expectations.
So these first three weekends basically were always – it was going to escalate in order of difficulty. You start with a Rice team who no one really knows about, kind of filled with transfers, new head coach, program wasn't left in a good place by Matt Braga. Take care of that. They just trounce Rice. Bama comes in, and playing baseball in the cold sucks, and the first two games kind of reflected that, but they still find ways to scratch across runs until on Sunday they get the job done and break things open. Now you've got two top 20 teams, I think maybe even two top 10 teams, in a quality UCLA matchup at Minute Maid. So you're going to have kind of a pseudo regional environment.
Yeah.
You're facing two fantastic teams, including one that doesn't like you after what transpired in Omaha last year. And all these guys, like LSU's been crushing the ball. Tennessee, even though they play in like, you know, a tiny ballpark, they've been crushing the ball. And UCLA is always going to be a quality team. So we're going to see the best test to date for Texas in this upcoming series at Minute Maid. Is there anything specific that you're trying to figure out about this team in this upcoming series?
Yeah, look, I want to see the bats perform a little better. I mean, look, you're nitpicking here. This team's 9-0, and they're outscoring their opponents by like a million. So but you brought it up, like the first two games against Alabama, they scored a total of three runs. Now, the good news is Pete Hansen's awesome and Tristan Stevens is awesome and this bullpen is awesome. So you won both of those games. But, you know, Tennessee and LSU, those are top 10 caliber teams. You think they have better pitching than Alabama does. I haven't fully studied those two rosters, but like you think Tennessee's ace is better than Alabama's ace. you think LSU's number two, who I assume will get the ball on Saturday when these two teams play,
right,
is better than Alabama's number two. So can your offense manufacture runs against some of the best pitchers in the SEC, which ultimately means some of the best pitchers in college baseball? I guess that's what I'm looking for the most, right? I obviously hope Texas stays undefeated. They win these three games and they go back to Austin at 12-0. But if there's one thing that I hope to see is, hey, 1-0 win counts the same as a 10-9 win. But if Texas can just explode offensively against one or both of these top 10, top 15 SEC teams, I'd be pretty excited with that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens with Mitchell Daly, if they keep him in that cleanup spot, especially with how Murphy Staley's been hitting of late, with how Silas Argawan's been hitting of late. I'm curious to see if the lineup construction remains the same. But, yeah, I want to see, you know, like you mentioned, I think Alabama's Friday guy is pretty well thought of, and we saw it. They only scratched one across, and, again, cold weather. But that's who they're going to be seeing, you know, late in the year if they make it that far. And so Tennessee's number one. Again, that's an Omaha team, a top five or a top 10 team or top 20 team. Like, that's, you know, they got to make sure that they can do that against other quality teams. I'm really curious to see how Pete Hansen handles Tennessee. Like, that's just a lineup that hits. That's what Tommy Vitello preaches. Like, that is an offensive team. That's what got people to the ballpark in Knoxville last year for a program that doesn't really, you know, baseball is not their forte. It's probably football, men's basketball, women's basketball. And you could even flip the sports as far as basketball goes. But if Pete Hansen is able to avoid the Crawford boxes at Minute Maid, I think he's going to be really successful. But that's what I'm looking for most, to see if he can do that, continue to spot things up, keep it low, keep mixing pitches, and keep Tennessee in the ballpark.
Yeah, that's well said. You mentioned that Tennessee's ballpark is tiny. The ball carries in Knoxville. But, look, Minute Maid's not a tiny ballpark, but left field, the Crawford boxes, like you said, it's pretty short, and we see it all the time. Guys can hit them out of there with relative ease. So I'm with you. Yeah, keeping the ball in the ballpark this weekend at Minute Maid, important. Obviously, the Texas pitching staff to this point has been spectacular. They passed every test, but like you said, this will be their toughest test to date. So I'm excited, man. I know you're coming down for these games. I think I'm going to go to at least one of these games, if not two or three. I'm looking forward to this. And yeah, this will be our first real test. I think everybody feels good about Texas, like, regardless of what goes down this weekend. But in terms of, like, super regional quality competition, like, Alabama can make the tournament. They were undefeated going into Austin. They can be a regional team, and look, maybe they get hot at the right time and make it to a super, who knows, with college baseball, you never know. But like, Tennessee, a team in the College World Series last year, LSU, a regular in Omaha under, you know, the last few years that they've had, and UCLA, obviously a very solid program too. So yeah, how this team stacks up, if they go 2-1, I'd call that a very successful weekend. Obviously 3-0, yeah, pretty damn good. So yeah, I'm excited to see how this team does against its obvious best competition of the year to this point.
And it's a string of games on the road. Basically, they've got, I think, double-digit. The recent Tuesday game against Sam Houston State started a string of like 10 games and 10 and 11 on the road, or 11 and 12 on the road. One of those is in San Marcos, but it's part of a back-to-back double midweek. And then they go on a spring break trip to South Carolina to play both the Gamecocks and then College of Charleston and the Citadel. So basically, this is going to be the beginning of a test of, you know, how resilient they are. And I know that's kind of a baseball, you know, sports trope, but right, it's true. Like, there's going on the road for 18, 19, 20 or 24-year-olds in Austin Todd and Tristan Stevens' case, like, it's monotonous. It gets old, but this is going to be a big test for them. South Carolina's good. And then for too long, Big 12 play will be just around the corner, starting with a tough Texas Tech team in Lubbock. So yeah, I want to see just I'm curious to see how the pitching handles all these different lineups. I think that's my big thing. And you want to see how the lineup handles opposing pitching, especially with how, you know, limited the competition they've faced this year has been.
Yeah, one other thing I want to see too, I mean, this goes to your point about the pitching, like, how does this bullpen fare? I'm confident in Aaron Nixon going up against anybody. We saw what he did in the Omaha run last year, but, you know, some of the lesser known bullpen quantities, and also how does David Pierce utilize his bullpen. Like, let's say Pete Hansen tomorrow night only goes five innings. Maybe it's an effective five innings, but he goes five innings. What's the bridge? Like, I'm asking you, Joe, like, what do you think the bridge, what do you think the order is in like a big game for Texas? We know who's closing it out. Maybe Nixon can give you two, but who, like, you don't have the Tanner Witt in the bullpen like you did last year.
Right.
That was a guy who could give you a few innings. Who's like six, seven, eight inning bridge guy? Because I think you've got a lot of candidates. There's obviously a lot of talent in that pen or arm barn, if that's what we need to call it now. But which guys do you expect to get the call in close game situations against good teams this weekend?
So I think you go Lucas Gordon and Jared Southard, I think, are two of the guys. And that's lefty and righty.
Yeah.
And just kind of going back, that's always kind of been the question about this team. You have a great back end of the bullpen guy. You have a great rotation. You have a great lineup. It's figuring out who's going to be, like you mentioned, that bridge between, you know, the starting pitching and Aaron Nixon. And Aaron Nixon can't go, you know, all three games. So I think, who did I say? Lucas Gordon, left-handed pitcher. Chase Loomis, another lefty. Let's see, going through these. Daniel Blair and Zane Morehouse. Those are two guys that they've given opportunities to.
You think Dre? Travis Thayer. Kind of a mid-game starter guy, but
he may be the Tuesday guy at this point.
Okay.
And then Travis Staley, someone who they were really high on before that he ended up having to have Tommy John, Luke Harrison. Like, they've thrown a lot of guys. LeBaron Johnson, who's had some real exciting stuff. They've thrown a lot of guys just trying to see. So this will be a big test for them. I think all those names are going to get used this weekend against all three of those teams. And this is a prove it weekend for the bullpen, I feel like. And yeah. That's I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something I'm going to have to check out.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. A lot of highly touted kids. I mean, to play baseball at Texas, you've got to be pretty good, but a lot of uncertainty sort of in that middle of your bullpen. Like you said, the starters are great. Nixon's great, but in between, who's going to step up and take over those middle inning roles for this team? Be fun to watch, but hopefully we can watch a few dubs this weekend.
Might be the only time we get to Minute Maid for a long time, too.
Ah, shoot, man. No kidding. We gotta find a way to get, like, U of H games or Rice games played there just to fill that place up.
I'd rather just go to Reckling Park. That's one of my favorite places to watch a game.
That is actually a cool ballpark, yeah. Move Sugar Land. Move the Space Cowboys up to Minute Maid for a couple of games while Major League Baseball can't get its head out of its ass.
You'll probably get some people who want to do that. So
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to hit?
That's it. I gotta go see what's up with Chris Beard. So
good luck. Tell him you gave him a D+ as your grade for him this season. Although that's not actually what you gave, so you don't need to lie to him. Probably not a great idea. All right, that's gonna do it.
Program.
Yeah. Well, they might play it. Nah, I guess there are no more Monday night games left to be played. So at this point. Who knows?
Not going to the NIT, so I don't know when that final is held, but I'm glad we don't have to worry about that anymore. No, I like studying bracketology to see what seed Texas is going to be, not if they're going to be in the tournament.
Agreed 100%. It'll be nice to not have to stress too much on Selection Sunday. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the 1-0 podcast. We'll be back probably next week to recap the Kansas basketball game, maybe preview or at least discuss the Big 12 conference tournament up in Kansas City. We'll recap Texas baseball and if any Texas football important news drops. I know we're getting closer to the start of spring football, so we'll obviously have more UT football storylines to discuss. Make sure you follow Joe on Twitter at JosephCook89. Check out the great work he does over at InsideTexas.com. Make sure you subscribe over there if you haven't done that yet. They're the best at covering all things UT. Check them out, InsideTexas.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Brad Kellner and listen to The Wheelhouse every weekday from 3 to 7 on ESPN Houston. You can listen to the show online, ESPN975.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, AV Consultations and Altstadt Beer. Most importantly, thanks to you for continuing to listen and support the 1-0 podcast. For Joe Cook, I am BK Brad Kellner. Y'all stay safe. Y'all stay healthy. And hook 'em.